This is beginning of Mr. Garriga's tape. This is Channel One Right. The beginning of Mr. Garriga's tape. On Friday, the 15th of November, 1968, this is the beginning of Mr. Garriga's whole reel. Channel One Right, the very beginning, on Friday, the 15th of November, 1968. I went by early in the afternoon, middle of the afternoon. Now the show was there, all the cars out. No dogs. When I came back by, they was all in. Mr. Garriga came out and talked with him a few minutes. First time I'd ever pulled up there. Said he was fixing to eat. And I could tell the way he talked, he'd just soon come on in there and we could talk right through supper. Well, I sort of hesitant to do that. He'd been over one of his friends, McIntosh, to see his grove, one of the groves he's selling over at Citrus, one of those beautiful groves. The Sony tape didn't do very well. It's the only one I had with me. And it's just as well as I didn't go in, because it wouldn't have been any good. I wouldn't have known the tape didn't work. So this is the beginning of Mr. Garriga's whole reel, Channel One Right, on Friday, the 15th of November, 1968.
I'm an old owner of 301 Grove this afternoon. Ben Littleton, you know him? From the church down there?
Yeah.
He and I drove over there and looked through the grove and Ollie and... her sister-in-law, Ms. Temple from Louisiana, went down to the beauty parlor and came in a minute ago. We just got in a little bit ago. And if you'd have been 20 minutes earlier, you wouldn't have called. So we hadn't been in.
Yeah. I just been over making overnight come this way. I thought I might catch y'all in.
Yes, sir.
I see you down at the store when you come by to get the paper, you know. Around here.
Yeah, there's some beautiful groves over there, especially there in Citra. They've got some beautiful groves. They're Crawls and Wartons. They're some of the best grove people in the state of Florida.
Yeah.
Put them up with, you can bring them from California, Arizona, anywhere they want to.
Yeah.
Any other country, and they're not going to find anybody that will... raise better oranges than they will right over there. There's some good oranges in there.
Yeah.
And, of course, it's just as good as far as that's concerned, but they know better. And I haven't had much experience in it, but I'll tell you, we had that little store over there, and I used to watch them go by, you know, and push them. And, we jumped up and bought this little old place here, and that was our first venture into it. Then I bought that building down there at McIntosh, and 301, of course, I've sold both of them. I guess you knew that.
I knew you said you was about ready to.
I'm selling. In fact, the deal has been already confirmed, and one of them about paid off. And they'll get on the other next month sometime and pick the people. I guess they'll finish paying it off then, too.
That one down at McIntosh, that's the old...
old Walkup.
Walkup Grove.
Yeah, yeah. John Walkup, the lawyer that's handling the papers for us, told these people from Miami, says if anything goes wrong that you don't...
Now, I don't want you to keep standing here. You've been out and you got your night rest to do one thing or another.
No, eat a little supper. Won't you come eat some?
No, thank you, sir.
I'd like to have that McIntosh gold. And I guess if I'd known John wanted it, I'd have sold it to him long ago, tell you the truth.
Yeah.
But sometime, you know, you overlook bets like that, Mr. Miles.
Right close to you.
Right at you. And... the Sunday after we confirmed the deal over there on that 301 Grove, Lamar Douglas, a boy from over there at Citra, came over here and parked right out there and said, Mr. Jack, I understand you want to sell the 301 Grove. I said, yeah, I do, Lamar. I said, I've been thinking about selling it. So I'd like to buy it. I said, well, you're just about a week too late, Lamar. And there I had a sale here.
Right
there, you see. And they've got some beautiful groves. He and his mother, his father's been dead now about 6-7 years. And they have had some beautiful groves. They have some along their side of stuff in there. Some down about Mascot, that's further down towards Leesburg in there. And they wanted that one there, and I'd have been glad to let them have it if I'd have known it. But so I just got a chance to tell them both to this man out of Miami. Dudzik's his name. He's a Polish man. Born and raised, I think, up in Chicago, and his wife, I think she's born up in Kansas somewhere. But she's a Bohemian ancestry.
Yeah.
And
Bohemian.
Bohemian ancestry, yes. And they have a business down there in Miami paint business, and they're going to sell that or close it out or something. I think they're going to try to sell it. And then they're going to try to move up here next year. They have one daughter that got this year's school down there, and they'll be free to move. Well, how's your cows? They're doing pretty good?
I'm just about out of the cow business.
Well, I am, too. I'm completely out of sight.
I just got a dozen of the best cows left. I didn't want to give them away.
Mm-hmm. You got white faces, haven't you?
Yeah.
You ever had any black ones, Mr. Moon?
Black ones, yes. I have black ones and any kind. Just
you
so
did?
I can get good ones.
Mm-hmm. You know, I was talking to an old man in Ocala the other day. I forget what that old gentleman's name is. He's a redneck from Illinois. I can't think of it. And he told me he bought 9 or 10 if somebody was here. Close to everything. Black Angus. Yeah, he had 2 ago. Oh, and I can't think of anything. And he said he bought them from somebody.
I never had sold any heifers. I just had a few cows.
Uh-huh.
Oh, I just sold the, you know, just weaning calves.
Yes.
I dropped them up on the market. Mm-hmm. Try to get them up there along, you know, in that September along in there when the price is pretty good.
Pretty good, that's right. I don't know. We may buy a few black Angus, tell you the truth about it. Maybe white faces. I don't know. Later on, and I got about 17, 18 acres, pretty good pasture back then. Put a few head out there to give us something to kind of sit along with, you know.
Yeah.
They're right close here. And like it was, Mr. Miles, we had to go down there every day, every day. If you got anything like that, you got to see it.
Oh, you've got to.
You've got to. If not, you won't come out all right with it.
I just don't like to let a day pass. I don't see them.
I don't either. I seen as not many that I did. And I just thought maybe we'd buy a few head and put them up there, and you see them every hour in the day, you see. And,
yeah.
Mr. Gaga, you know, I two or three cows down there. They were part Bramer. And tell you the truth about it, I had one down there, a big black one. She was one of the first I built. And when she came down, the border was there. And when she came down, she was the gentlest cow I suppose I had babies. And I don't know what happened to that cow. She must have given me at least 8 or 10 calves, Mr. Myers, and about 2 years ago. Holly and I went down there one afternoon to feed them, and we fed them, and we were driving on. I said, it seemed like I smelled something. And I said, you drive the truck on down to the gate. I see I'll walk this smoke. I walk out a little smoke, and bless that, I see Miss Hannah saying she's just as dead as an apple. Been dead, I guess, a couple of days. Now, what happened to her, I don't know, but frankly, I believe that it's a bit of a bound to have.
Yeah.
And she was just mud fat.
Well, now,
Because she was right up to, against the little swamp like, I guess like the wheel do, get up there and pick around, you know. And I just see the big old snake get her out there.
Yeah, they put the nose up there, you see.
Yeah.
And,
hit her in the face, maybe, you see. And Lord, it didn't take long. Knock her out. And she was so decomposed already. And so I got a boy to go down there and help me. And he got a bunch of flowers and stuff. And just went through everything right there. He was dirt. There's nothing else I could do. Thought about putting a rope on her and pull her on down, but I was afraid, you know, she wouldn't stand pulling, so I just burned her right there. Yes, it was a good one.
Well, the birds would pretty well take care of her.
Yeah, that's right. That's right.
I've lost a cow or two over there, and I just put them back there in the woods.
I've done several that way, that's right.
Yeah.
But I was afraid that she wouldn't hardly stand pulling, you see.
That's right.
I haven't lost very many, tell you the truth about it. I lost a nice cow right out here in this little pasture. If you remember, we had a little storm that didn't, well, let's say 4 years ago when there was so much water on the ground.
Yeah.
I went down there after the storm, you might say it was pretty well over. And I looked right out in the middle of the field, and there she was. And I walked up there and caught her by the horn. She was just a limber right on as could be. And I couldn't find any blemishes on her with the exception of a kind of a brown-looking spot right on her stomach. And there was no broken limbs out there that could have hit her, killed her. And I just never did find out what killed that cow. I got a couple of boys from McIntosh. We just dug a big grave right side of her, rolled her over in there, you see, and covered her up right there.
Mm-hmm.
But I believe a snake killed her, Mr. Miles. I'll tell you why. About 4 or 5 days after that, we were eating supper one afternoon, just about this time, and I finished up and gone in the bathroom to brush my teeth. And all I heard the dogs barking right back in the yonder. So she grabbed up a long kind of an oak, and went out there, and sure enough, they had one bait under an oak, I mean an orange tree out there, mm-hmm. and she killed it. Mm-hmm. I didn't know she'd killed it, so I came out of the bathroom. And I firmly believe that Durham snake had come out of the swamps, don't you see?
Yeah.
And after you hit that cow, come on out here and settle under that tree there.
I wonder more. They don't get more of them.
I'm telling you, I'm the same way. I'm afraid that all one thing. It seems to me like the state of Florida ought to go ahead and put a bounty on those things. I told Dale Key about it one day and said, well, Joe, he says, where'd the money coming from? Well, now here's the thing about it. I think they spend money on a lot of things and not really is necessary to the state of Florida or the welfare of the people than going ahead and getting rid of some of these darn snakes, because it's going to be so bad after a while, so it'll be kind of dangerous to get out there. It is now. I lost a couple of nice dogs right out here in this pasture way back there in the summer, and I know well and good around
this last summer.
It's been about 5 months ago. Yeah. It's a small white one here and this big red one that I had.
Yeah.
And a little bit of black one, they went out there, and the white one came back, and I've never seen the other two things.
Well, you know, ever since I've been down here, I don't get out at night.
Well, don't do it.
I don't get out at night out of the house unless I got a good flashlight.
And that's the truth.
And I don't get out in the house in the daytime, but when I got them old boots on, you see me around there, them four buckle boots.
Well, I always watch everywhere I go. I declare I'm just so snake conscious. My dog.
Well, a lot of times a fellow will be thinking of something else.
Yeah, that's true,
that's
too. Can't think of
he practically walk over a snake and not even know it.
I put my dogs away on the north end of the garage around there. They've got quarters all the way across up there, three different compartments for them. And before I go out there, I turn this light on, turn the one on right here in the room, and then I got a big spotlight around and on the corner. I can see a pin out there. I'm afraid of them, but just can't help it.
Yeah.
And I think it's a good idea to be there.
You know, I heard Mr. your neighbor down here lost some cattle not long ago.
Yeah.
Just loaded them up right there, all his place.
I think they must have. You see, he's got some of this Orin, Illinois, I believe, style of the people.
Yeah.
All this stuff back out in here. And they rent that stuff from him for just a small amount. And put those cows out there. And I think somebody just went in there and picked them up. Tell you the truth. And one thing about it, I don't believe Marvin would say that he missed them if he hadn't, because he's a good...
He seems to be one of the best.
He's a reliable boy.
Yeah.
When we were selling our cows, he helped me to move them. I couldn't get Robert at that time, Robert Williams, and he hauled them for me, and I declare he was just so nice and all that.
Well, now, he helped me one time, and he handles the cows easier than anybody I've ever had over there.
He seems like he just has that technique going about it.
Some of them come over there, they have them hot rods.
And, get some wild.
Holler at them and get some wild.
That's right. But Marvin was so nice about it. I paid him well for helping us, too.
Yeah, you'd make money paying a man like that a good price, and what you'd pay getting a man from town.
That's right, that's true.
Yeah, just because your neighbor knows you're cutting down on prices.
No,
Mr. Garrigan?
I'll catch you. I'll go into town on Saturday and get a little grocery, and that's about the biggest. We usually back here by 1 or 2 o'clock, so anytime you feel like coming over. You know Mr. Brown died, you knew that. The old man has been sick down there so long.
Ed McIntosh.
Old fella's been flat at his back down here several years.
Mm-hmm.
And he was a paint foreman for Ford Motor Company, I think, about 18 or 20 years. I think maybe one. I suppose they have plants in Kentucky somewhere up in that year. Assembly plants, I think it is.
Mm-hmm.
He worked with them for a number of years up there. Mm-hmm. Down here. He was a mighty fine old fella. I thought he was, Mr. Brown. We've all got to do it.
Yes, and what is tomorrow? Tomorrow's Saturday, isn't it?
Saturday,
and they have a funeral tomorrow?
Yes, they're going to have the service at 10 o'clock
at Ocala.
At Ocala, yeah. Let's see. Can't think of Hires. Services. They're going to bury them at 2 o'clock tomorrow afternoon, Monday night.
Your good wife's going to be.
I finished the fourth grade in school.
Yeah.
I suppose I did. And that, you know, when I came along, there wasn't too much schooling to be had in the state of Mississippi. That's where I was born and raised.
Yeah.
There wasn't too much to be had. It's a little better out there now, but
well,
it was rough back in those days.
Well, now, this is 170. on Channel One Right, and this is the end of that little, just a little brief chat I had with Mr. Gallagher. It's almost dark, and I came on over to the store then, and I got a little information on him, and we had right general talk.
No, sir. Another rain bring more cold, too.
That's right. Big swash again.
Eggplants next Monday.
How do you market them now?
Sell them over at Pond's.
Oh. Well, where did I get the idea he was going out of business?
The old man died, but the boys got it now.
And he's going to keep on?
There's two of them over there.
Well, do they have a... Is there right... Is the right spot vegetable now?
Well, it hadn't been too big a fall, no sir. Peanuts and peas and okra, eggplant, beef squash, one thing.
Now, Freddie told me this, right interesting information, that Mr. Gallagher bought that old Walkup Grove, and then he bought a grove over on 301, and he's just selling both of those. And he still has a grove up there at the old Jack Ridson place where he lives. He bought that grove, the Walkup Grove, Freddie said, for $51,000. And if made it back the next year on foot. And then for several years after that, he still made money. And then the Minute Maid offered him $120,000 for the grove. And he didn't take it. And Freddie said he said that was the biggest mistake he ever made in his life. Because the next year or two, the freezes began. And they haven't made any money. And they've had to work pretty hard to keep the groves producing. I told Freddie I didn't realize anyone had made that much money off of oranges. And he said that was just after the concentrate had come in. And he said in those days, they could sell them for $4 and $5 a box on the tree, and now they do well to get $2.50, I believe he said, on the tree. And winter, the Minute Maid and some of the big organizations have put in, so just grove after grove after grove in South Florida. So the production is awfully high, so much higher than it used to be. He said he doubted that Mr. Gary got $25,000 for this grove. I haven't had much luck today. That tape didn't work out this morning at the store. Or this afternoon. I came home early and changed clothes and went over there. And Jane was there. And Rob came in. And I got her to tell me all over again what she told me yesterday, that it was so interesting. She said yes. She said, Mr. Gallagher said if they didn't pay him, if they wouldn't pay him, he would get a Coca-Cola crate after them. And he said he didn't know why in the world. He never had been killed. And he said he would bring oranges and grapefruits up to the house with Mama when they hadn't had any themselves at all. And he likes to work fast. And when he gets a gang working and they slow up on him, he's hard to live with. And his wife, when they were cutting out the dead timber in their grove, his wife just sent him home and said they'd do it without him, and she just worked it out. She took over and worked it out. And she told another story about his temper. Said his little service station was next to the pond's big vegetable shipping place, and somebody backed into his new car. And he said they're all standing around just wondering what in the world happened when he got there. He had such a temper. And she told it about one of the little boys. After Mr. Gary got there, they asked that little boy, then they told him to go on home, what he's staying there for. And he said, they said Mr. Gary would lose his temper, and he wanted to sit around there to see him do it. And he said Mr. Gary, that amused him so, he just laughed. So that had a happy ending. Fred said he was a timekeeper in the turpentine business. He didn't ride the turpentine rounds as Jane thought he did. But now Jane told the, she told him rather briefly, but she told him, and I'm sorry, I don't have it. I don't know, someone wrong. Now, this is a little piece of Mr. Boyd's tape. I can't find any other place to put it. This is a little piece of Mr. Boyd's tape from the same afternoon, just before I went down to Mr. Garriga's. I caught Mr. Boyd. He's almost home. Oh, and he's wagging a big sack of groceries. We went in and sat in the car and visited, and he talked and talked and talked. Most of the talk was a long recital of what had happened to his wife. But now this first part is right delightful. He was up in a tree getting moss down for his cattle, and he fell off, and the ladder fell on him.
Up tree when the ladder fell on you, Mr. Boyd?
Well, I just pulled some moss. You know, I pulled moss
for
years for my cattle, and it helps out wonderful. About the last of January, I hadn't been doing much at it, but I decided I was, like I did, a year and a half, 2 years ago, and I quit it.
Uh-huh.
Took the ladder out in there, and the limb was, or just my blindness is what is the trouble.
Yeah.
The limb run up this way, but was too slanting.
Yeah.
And I didn't set my ladder right, so got up there and think it's another tree. Limb run over from another tree. Had a water moss on it, and I got over there and pulled it. And then I lightened my ladder on the limb that was leaning against. Mm-hmm. Or just a branch of the tree. And it went sliding with me. And I decided I'd better jump to the ground, and I did. And kind of stole up the left ankle. And the ladder slided on off and came down on, across me. And I think the point of the foot of the ladder was under a root. And
oh.
The ladder was pretty heavy. And it came down across my back right, just right as well say ruined me. I stayed in bed 2 months.
2 months?
Yes,
sir. Why, Mr. Boyd?
And I got up, went to feeding my cattle, lifting hay. Thought I'd get along very well. I didn't think when I felt it at first that I'd hardly ever over it. I stayed the rest of that day, I think it was on a Monday. I come on to the house and decided I'd better get you as quick as I could before I got sore and stiff. So I got to the house and I lay down and stayed there all the rest of the afternoon and all that night and all the next day. I couldn't walk. And spent the next night, second night. I said, well, I'll have to let somebody know something about it because I may get to suffering for the want of some attention. So I got out and called from my house here to the mailbox down that gate. Every step of it. Got there where I could make a sign at somebody. And my neighbor over here saw me. Now I kind of raised up my hand at him.
You can just leave push that open, it'll stay open.
Yes, sir.
You didn't finish telling me about your back. Now, what have you done to your back to help it?
Well, there wasn't anything hardly you could do without. It was a brace. I'd go to the hospital, and I couldn't see any sense in that.
Well, walking all right out there?
Walking, yes, sir.
But it's lifting.
It's not a broken bone. I fell in a ditch out there over 2 years ago, hunting a calf. It's an old horse, mare horse. Got after the 46 killed it.
Oh, really?
And I was blind, partly blind, worse now than I was then. Now, I went to step across the ditch and had an axe handle in my hand. A good one that I made. And I stepped on a bunch of wire grass. My foot slipped back in the ditch. And I fell right across that axe handle. Coming the ace and unjointing my neck right back here.
Oh, my.
Where I'd had a carbuncle in my day. On the neck. But I always broke several ribs, cracked them. I doctored myself out of that.
Yeah.
I went to Doc Strange this October past 2 years ago and told him about my neck. Glad he didn't want to be having no more carbuncles. That's all.
What did you do to your carbuncle, Mr. Boyd?
I went to Gainesville with a carbuncle on my neck and gave me all manner of trouble. We locked the carb. I wasn't in the office. There was a nurse in there. She said we'd have to put some compost pulses on it. She put a pulse on it, waiting for him to come. He come in and looked at it and said, oh, well, you'd have to go to the hospital. I said, well, my folks don't know anything about my whereabouts or where I'm at or what to do. I said, I ain't got no way to get them words out. They haven't got a phone. I said, I won't have it today. I can't go to no hospital today. I came on back. I went to Doc Strange. He looked at it, felt of it. Said, you won't have to go to no hospital. He said, I can take care of that. He put me on the table there, board. Took a lancet, just split it open. He looked at me like he had some kind of instrument, like a pair of tongs or something. See, he looked at me like he was in the shape of my fingers. He went in there and pushed it down and got a hold of that core of that carbuncle and done like that. Pulled it out of there.
What was you doing about that time?
Sitting sturdy. Lying there, suffering. Just let him do it. He jerked it out. He took a mop and mopped it out with some kind of a drug. Almost set you on fire.
Hmm.
And he let me get off of the table. And I liked went to sleep coming home. I got so much relief. I'd been suffering it for days, several days.
Mm-hmm.
But I got relief then. I come in the ace of going to sleep in the car. And but it went on and got well. Now that's how nice he came into that.
Yeah.
Well, they'll do just such things as that. Maybe the next thing he does is just about as much to the opposite as it could be.
Yeah.
Now we were sitting up the car when he was telling me these things. He looking right straight ahead, you know, he can't see much, almost blind. But in his mind's eye, he could see these scenes. This last one was Dr. Strange, lancing, pulling out to see that carbuncle. Oh, that was graphic. And in that other one, you see, he doctored himself out of that trouble that he had when he fell in the ditch and hurt his rib cage. Oh, that's hardy. And what he's going to do now is tell me how he raised beans. That's what he made money. That's where he made money, on beans. And he had his own system of raising them.
You get your experience, it's practice.
Yeah.
And
Mr. Boyd, of all that you've done so many things in your time, what have you done, what brought you in the most money, the best money, what that paid you the best of everything, of the things that you've done?
Snap beans. Green beans. I made more money off of beans than any other crop to ever be. And I've got a little money out of watermelon, but I had enough trouble with that.
Yeah.
I had to give two cars for one.
Yeah.
One got in a wreck, tore it up, destroyed it, and held up the second one, put a freight on that one. I never get anything about it.
What have you learned about raising beans that helps you the most?
Well, sir, it's just simply like this. I had good bean land. It hardly ever got too dry.
Yeah.
Very seldom.
Yeah.
It had moisture.
What time do beans come in?
Well, I grew as much as three crops a year, one in the spring, one in the summer, and one in the fall.
Yeah. Oh, really? Well, I didn't realize that.
And I used to make three crops Yeah, and the old men around here said they didn't know how in the world I done it. Raised such pretty beans right in the summertime.
Mm-hmm. What was it? You had a land that didn't get too dry?
Didn't get too dry, but sometimes it'd get pretty wet.
Oh.
And I had to know how to handle it. You take the Richardsons down here, supposed to be some of the most successful farmers. I sure cropped some beans with them. And they come to my field and look at my beans. One know, Boyd, why do you put two rows, to make a bed, put two rows of beans on it?
Two rows?
I said, because a big bed won't melt down from rain, excessive water, as quick as a narrow bed. It'll melt down flat.
I never heard of that, Mr. Boyd.
And I says, not only that, I don't put my fertilizer down before I plant the beans. I plant my beans with a cold planter, leaves a concave trench on top of them. I sprinkle my fertilizer in that, put it on that, and then take a something like a 4x4 or a fence post. Hitch a mule to it and knock off two rows, level it down and cover that fertilizer in that trench, and it's a good working for the beans.
When do you do that?
Let them beans stand there till they get about the third leaf begins to come out on them, and go there and sod them.
Yeah. Well, when do you knock it off, put dirt on the fertilizer, cover the fertilizer, fertilize them? When do you fertilize them?
Yes. After I plant them,
as
quick as I can get back there.
As soon as you get them in.
Don't put it on the beans. Don't wait till they come up, because it'll burn them.
Yeah.
You turn right back when you get them planted and sprinkle your fertilizer on top and drag a post over the 4x4.
Yeah.
Strike it off and cover up that trench and cover your fertilizer. Not very deep, right close to the top of the ground. Then, I'll take a 14-inch sweep. See here, instead of setting it this way,
yeah,
he said it kind of like that.
Shallow.
Let the dirt slide back over the wing. And sod them. And put it in the ground. Where the dirt runs back over the wings of the sweep and sod them good and deep. You go below the young roots with the wing of your plow. You reach it up under there, like you see here, and kind of goes under the roots that are coming out there like your fingers.
Oh.
Soften the ground under there.
Oh.
That fertilizer goes to work. I mean at once.
Oh.
And they'll go to growing. And don't never take a sweep and sit up like that. A bean has a lot of roots, but they don't grow very far out.
I see.
You trim them off.
Yeah.
And you engine your beans. And they'll suffer quick from dry weather.
Yeah.
Keep that dirt soft. You side them that way, you take another bigger sweep and do the same way with the middle. But I put two rows to the bed. And I can get up there if it's the rain or too wet to plow, I can get up there a day ahead with a mule and run a furrow in there to dry it out.
Oh, and on the bed.
Keep them a-growing. And they won't scald and drown out.
On the bed?
On the bed. And I plant corn.
What do you do that with?
That on the bed?
Yeah.
Just a small sweep.
10-inch?
They're about 2.5 feet apart.
Oh,
there.
Oh, I see.
Makes it handy for the pickers.
I see.
They can pick two rows.
Now you mean on the bed they're that far apart?
Yes.
Well, that's a pretty big bed then, isn't it?
Yes, sir. The beds are 6 feet apart. I make them 6 feet.
Yeah.
It gives each double row of beans 6 feet to grow in.
Yeah.
On.
No. Well, now, how'd you ever get that system, Mr. Boyd?
I got it myself. I figured it out, knew what to take to farm.
Mm-hmm.
In advance. And according to the land that you're planting.
Yeah.
You must work to protect it from melting away your bed. Just take a plow and throw up two furrows. With a turn plow, you can lay it off with an opening plow, you call it, and then throw it back in there, put your fertilizer down on them the minute time it's too far below the roots.
Yeah.
And that'll melt down flat if there comes enough rain. I planted a row of corn in every other row. They want to know what you boys, is what do you plant corn in the beans for? Why don't you just take half of the land and plant in beans and the other half in corn? I says, well, I got a field here. The only shares with you. I says, come over here and count it off. Stick up a stake. Take half of it. And still, I'll pick the beans on both parts. And count up the baskets and see which makes the most. I says, if I mind where the corn's at, don't make as many beans as yours, I says, I'll make it good out of my hay. So, they went to doing the same thing.
Uh-huh.
They got to where they planted most everything they had on double rows.
Uh-huh.
Now,
oh,
they,
did they?
They're old, experienced farmers.
Yeah.
They went to the university to learn how to farm. And I went to the field and learned.
Yeah. Well, how did you work that out, Mr. Boyd, about the double rows on the bed and things like that?
Well, I just saw it. I knew it. I just had that much teaching from my father and saw him farm, watched him.
Yeah.
And I could figure that a broad bed would stand up better than a narrow bed. Wet times, it holds moisture better than a dry time. I had Ed H. Willis come over there. I had a pretty field of beans. Want me to take all you don't want to cut the root to them beans. You ought to take, they're pretty. You ought to just take much light. You ought to take a harrow and a diamond tooth harrow and harrow. That's all they need. I just done just to the opposite. That was scratching them off. They were so close to the top of the ground because there's plenty of moisture. And so if I'd have done that, I'd have scratched off the root. Instead of that, I'd run under them and let them drop back over the wings of the sweep.
Well, now, you didn't learn that from your daddy.
No, but he gardened. He run a vegetable business for more than 40 years. Beat any man truck farm in the boys in the state of Georgia.
Oh, you come by it regular then, through your daddy.
Did I ever tell you? He made out a report, a government report, and he never saw but three farmers' crops on his way to town and back. He made it out to the county, and finally the government wrote him a letter and offered him a job in the statistician's office, $6,000 a year, and him with 12 children. He didn't go.
Yeah.
He was giving up to be the best farmer there was in the country, in that county especially.
That's up in Georgia?
Yes, sir.
When did you come down here, 1921?
Let's see, 1913.
Yeah, I got it wrong, didn't I?
Yes, sir.
Was you ahead of...
Well, I come first, but this is when I married. I married September the 28th, 1913, and I come to Florida. Oh, I was just 21 years of age when I put my foot on the ground. I was 21 years old on the 7th day, the 4th day of February, and I put my foot on the ground in Micanopy on the 7th day.
But you didn't stay that time?
No, sir. I wasn't married when I first came here. I stayed here about 4 years.
Uh-huh.
Went back home and farmed my daddy.
Yeah.
He was sick. He and his wife both were sick, my mother. 6 weeks, they had a trained nurse. Hard to put in a home with them. I got out, made a crop with one plow hand, filled up his barns, and he told me out of his own, with his own tongue, says, you made enough money to pay the wages hand and everything else that was bought, fertilizer and everything but the doctor bill. So that's all you like of paying the clay out of debt anywhere and everywhere.
Is that right?
Now, well,
you down here working, Mr. Boyd, during the war.
That was after I was 21. Yes, sir. Yes, sir. They put me in class B1, 1917. and I would have been going and leaving the wife and children if it hadn't stopped.
Oh, I see.
Then didn't have no more sense than to feel kind of like I wanted to go.
Yeah.
Because it was meatless days and sweetless days and everything else.
Yeah.
It looked like you'd be better off in there on it. You'd get something to eat and you didn't know where you'd get here or not. Everything was high. The old Captain Roosevelt says, I won't let prices go out through the ceiling. Well, are you enjoying the conversation or are you?
Mr. Boyd, I enjoyed visiting with you. I hadn't seen you in so long.
Well, I enjoy you. I enjoy you. Last time you was by here, you know, Ms. Guthrie.
Ms. Guthrie, yeah.
Her husband.
Yeah.
Was he living?
No.
But he passed away.
Yeah.
Well, her and the Townsend boy married.
Yeah.
And I think you told me that he spent $2,500 equipment to save hay.
Yeah.
I bought hay from him last year.
Oh, did you?
Yes, sir. And they didn't have it this year. The caterpillar worms eat them out.
Oh, I'm sorry to hear that.
I damaged them. And they didn't have much for sale.
Oh, I'm sorry to hear that.
But I hope they're living to suit themselves. That boy's been there for 25 years. She tells me they got just 7 years difference in their age. I see him pretty often, but since they married, why, they don't stop by to see me much. They lost 10 head of cattle, I believe it was. You heard about that?
No, sir.
Somebody come and went in the pasture and took out, was it 8 or 10? I mean, it was 8 head. 10 head. If I'm not mistaken. And last I heard of it, they never had recovered it.
You mean they just come over there and stole them right out of
there? Rolled them right out in the pasture and drove out, you know.
Well, I'll be darned.
Carried them all.
I'll be darned.
That was over $1,000.
Well, you know, You know, cattle have been right high lately, Mr. Boyd.
Yes.
They've been bringing a good price.
Sure.
Take an old, just an old, ordinary old cow, they'd pay 20 cents for.
26.
20 cents.
Well, that's luck. It seemed like it has been good for 2 years. I struck
yeah.
it pretty lucky. I didn't have nothing but some yearlings. I sold 5 bulls last year and kept 6 heifers that I raised. And them 5 bulls, let me see, brought me $487.60, 62 cents, I think it was.
Yeah.
And I sold my calves this year, born first week in April, all of them. I sold 7 head, brought me 500 and... No, I can't recall that. Sure not.
Uh-huh.
But there's a good sale. I expect it's went up a little bit since that.
Has your boy got... he's got a truck he can haul for you?
No, sir, not a cattle truck. I've been using that man Adkins' truck for some time, and I got to hunt with somebody else. You have a cattle truck?
No, sir.
But I've been thinking I might get Marvin Townsend to haul mine if I have some way to get him wood.
He got a good one over there. He hauled some for me one time.
He did?
And he handles them nice, Mr. Boyd. He knows how to handle cattle. He can move them.
Well, he's dealt in it so long because he knows cattle. He understands it.
Well, I know.
Like them fellas come here, all of my boys know. Especially
a lot of them don't seem to learn. They're rough with them.
That's right, too rough.
Yeah, now he can get them to move and they don't get them nervous.
So the man, Brother Crum, I told him my boy knew what to do. When he got through, he said, just like you said, sir, he knows how to handle it.
Yeah.
I've been functioning as a driver, I might as well say, the most of the time. And one person comes with a truck and the rest
yeah.
of us loads them, and it's no trouble to unload them when you get them there.
That's right.
And that man hasn't been charging me. He's got a light truck. He hasn't been charging me no big price. And I haven't been sending off no big bunches, small bunches.
Yeah.
And sometimes he's carrying one or his own or something other. Do.
That's right. Well, now, if you can make it like that, you see, it makes it easier on you.
Yes. You still work at the university,
yeah,
I guess.
Yeah, still working up there.
Have a lifetime job.
Yeah, if you last that long.
Well, I'm failing, and my eyes is the worst in the world, and my health is failing since I got that trouble in my back. It doesn't help my eyes any.
No.
But after I got up, after 2 months, I got along pretty well, so I went to lifting something.
Yeah.
It's that cinder, it knits to your bone and in the joints. You overstrain that. And it could have mashed my kidneys and bowels and a whole lot of liver. And got a ladder coming down across me.
Yeah.
Hell, sometimes I don't feel it at all. But if I work a lift, least bit, very much, there's no backward bend. I can't bend backward. See there?
Yeah.
Just throw your head back or pick up a post and try to stand it on its end. That's no good for me.
Well, let me tell you.
Good for it.
Yeah. Yeah.
But he maybe got something that's much better.
Yeah.
Well, I don't have arthritis that I know of, but I got the worst case of sinus trouble.
Oh?
Yes.
Well, what do you do for your sinus?
Well, you'd be surprised to know. I have a box of Tellurine salve. Now, you can listen to this story and you want to say, he's already asked me, how did I learn how to farm?
Yes.
How did I know it? Tellurine salve is not recommended for no sinus trouble. It's something like that. A cold in your head. But I tell you what it reads, the way it reads. Any kind of itch or humor that you have, makes no difference which. If you rub Tellurine salve on it, and it doesn't stop the itching sensation, burning, take the box back and get your money.
That's what it says?
That's what it says. And I'll tell you how come me to take to that. It's some kind of a drug or something chemical there. Whatever you call it, this powerful. If it doesn't stop it in 5 short minutes, return the box and get your money.
Hmm.
Now, you know, a guarantee like that amounts to something with me. I got a bottle of 3S tonic there in that bag. It says if you're not better and feel better in 7 days, you can talk about arthritis or whatever you might have. If you don't feel better in 7 days, bring the bottle back and get your money.
Is that what it said?
That's what it said. The bottle is in that package. What kind of thing? Now, there's some drug there. It's not recommended for these other things. But that powerful drug, I take a little old stick mop, get some salve on it, put it about as far, you know, your hair gets tender when you get a certain distance in there. And I put a little of that salve in my ears, and you could put it in your nose. Or you could take some spirit turpentine and do the same thing.
Well, now that turpentine, you know, it's just magic. It helps in so many things.
Just one of the most things, one of the most wonderful things that a man can have. Anyhow, I guess that's it.
SSS tonic. Help build energy, rich red blood. Now, where'd that come from, Mr. Boy?
Yeah?
Where'd you get this?
I can buy it there in Micanopy, that red and white. That's where I got that, the red and white store.
Oh, really?
It's at the drugstore at McIntosh.
Yeah.
Most any drugstore. Now, you know, you see what I'm driving at now? If they put that kind of a guarantee on it,
It spells something to me. It means something to me. They wouldn't do it. I done take it. You'll feel better if you're not sick. If you don't mind, you'll feel better when you take that 7 days. I done take it. It'll improve your feeling. Absolutely.
For best results, take SSS tonic regularly according to the above directions. Starts it very quickly, helps you feel better fast. And it builds back blood power, so vital to strength, energy, and pep.
That other one has a stimulant. You remember that old medicine they call Hattie-Call?
Yes. Yeah.
That's what made such a terrible rep for that. And, of course, they take it had so much alcohol in it, the liquor, spirits.
Yeah.
Until everybody take it, or just go crazy about it.
Oh, I see.
Add some other drug in there to help it and to balance it. And they just go crazy about Hattie-Call. It all went just like it come. It all left all at once. It all come all at once. And there wasn't nothing to it but the stimulant that gave it such a boost.
Yeah. Well, now, here's a guarantee. Taking as directed on the label, your first bottle of SSS tonic will help you feel better in 6 days, or the full purchase price of that first bottle will be refunded. Write to SS Company, Box So-and-So, Georgia, Atlanta, Georgia. State price you paid and enclose the bottle cap.
Now, you hear that? They can't afford to put no such a guarantee as that out without they know what they're talking about.
Yeah.
Don't you think so?
I think so.
They'd go broke as a hat before you could say pretty.
Yes, sir. 6 days.
Is that worth anything to you when you don't feel right and your blood's run down?
Yeah.
Well, now then, I got one more thing because I'm a friend to you. Because I'm old. Because I know.
Because he knows more than most men, he said. And he went into some detail to tell me about sexual activity at his age that a man would run down. And he cited one of his neighbors who was married to a younger wife. And he worked hard, too. And it was the man was running down. And then I asked him what he liked to eat the best.
Joy. And the more you eat of it, the more you enjoy it. You just keep it eating.
Yeah. What do you like the best eat now, Mr. Boyd?
Why, I don't stick to no hardly one thing. What do you reckon I had for breakfast? Let me see. This morning, I had hash fried Irish potatoes. I had a piece of meat. I had coffee. I had grits, egg, and, I don't know what I'd call it all over.
Jelly?
Some toasted piece of bread with margarine on it. I toasted in the fry pan.
Uh-huh.
And I have syrup. I eat cane syrup, or either I drink a glass of syrup, sweetened water, for dinner. Don't drink no coffee but once a day.
Uh-huh.
Hardly ever. And, I don't know hardly what all I did have. It was eggs and eggs. Sometimes I whittle up a little bit of cheese and put my grits in the pan and stir it and put a little margarine in with it. Stir that. I whittle up some cheese. I put an egg in it. Stir it all together. If I got the iced potato, boiled iced potato, I can mash up a boiled iced potato and put with it.
Yes.
It's all good.
That's all.
You got a piece of cornbread, you crumb it up. You got a piece of light bread, just crumb it up in that same pan. And stir it up and eat it. You look what a mixture you got.
That's right.
It's all good.
That's right.
Nice.
Everything in one dish.
Yeah, everything in one dish.
Yes, sir. Huh.
Anything, cold biscuit. I buy these little light rolls. And I put my grits in there and I crumble up a light roll and I put in some margarine and break my egg and scramble it with it. And that's, I live on a regular variety of stuff.
Yeah.
And I eat maybe a piece of banana. I'll eat a part of an apple, and I have some cinnamon, lemon buns, and I eat them mostly between meals, though.
Yeah.
And I buy graham crackers, and I don't eat the same thing every meal.
Yeah.
They eat a part of it.
You eat the same thing for breakfast every day?
Not enough, sir.
about these little wheat sausages. They're good. They're very easy to fix.
Yeah.
You can drop them in the pot and let it come to a boil and it's ready to eat.
Yeah.
You put them in the fry pan and just roll them over a time or two and they're ready to eat. No trouble at all.
Yeah.
You can boil an egg, a couple of eggs, and you can mix that with your breakfast. So that's the way I live.
Uh-huh.
Some people eat grits and ham and egg for breakfast and a cup of coffee. And I like cornbread. I can cook the best cornbread you ever put in your mouth.
Oh, really?
Yes, sir. If you can remember it, I'll tell you what to do.
All right, sir.
My old mother used to call it muffin bread. Had muffin rings, cooked muffins.
Mm-hmm.
But you cook it in a hoe cake, whatever way it is. You take some flour, it's already got the ingredients in it to make biscuit.
Yeah.
You can add a little bit of fried meat grease. You can add enough egg according to the quantity that you're fixing. One or two or three or whatever eggs you want to add with it. You add a little fried meat grease and it says it's already got the stuff in it. But you can add half a teaspoonful of soda if you're going to, according to what you got, that much or more or less. And you put a tablespoonful of sugar or more according to how much meal you got. You take a little cornstarch or pancake flour, or if it's a regular cake mix, you can add in a tablespoonful or two of that and a tablespoonful of sugar and grease your pan and put it in there and sit in the stove. You got a good baker, and if it don't break over, it's pretty nice, a good thick crust
that
you ever saw. Why, you can have my hat.
And you,
it'll keep a week.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
You just sit that plate in the stove or in the refrigerator, and it'll be good for a week.
Yeah, that's the beauty of it.
It's a good, soft, mellow cornbread.
Uh-huh.
And the best you ever put in your mouth. You can add some little buttermilk to it if you want to, or sweet milk, either one. It's all around it. It needs doctoring. And the egg is what helped to make it brown, nice.
You don't have chickens out here now.
No. So you come back to see me, Mr. Miles.
All right. Thank you, Mr. Boyd. I enjoyed the visit.
I enjoyed all of you.
Well, Mr. Boyd was getting out of the car. Had a door open all the time so he could spit and have plenty of room. Had his sack in his arm, and away he went. I turned around, and I looked at him as he went back. And he was going right on up to that dark house with that sack of groceries. Oh, he talked for the longest time about the last illness of his wife. I didn't copy that. And when she died, he could see that spirit go out towards the east and over that swamp. Maybe I ought to set that down. See, he has all that experience that he lives with. And he has those words that bring it all up to him. I've wondered how it is when he's not talking, if he can think with his same satisfaction that he can talk. I need to talk. My thoughts go in the wrong direction. So this is the end of that very nice little visit sitting in the car out there in front of Mr. Boyd's house towards right late on this Friday evening, the 15th of November, 1968. It's warm. The wind's in the south again after this first frost and half a dozen cold spells. It's been a cold November, but just one frost, just enough frost to kill the indigo, the green leaves on the indigo. I don't think it's hurt the grass much. And this is Channel 1 Right on Mr. Garriga's tape. This is Channel 1 Right, the end of Channel 1 Right on Mr. Garriga's tape. The end of Channel 1 Right on Mr. Garriga's tape. And this is the end of the visit, long visit with Mr. Boyd.